In a large, nondescript military tent, 53-year-old Major General James Mattis, small and lean, with a reputation as a ferocious and brilliant warrior, briefs hundreds of his fellow U.S. Marines. With him is Major General James Amos, who is in charge of the 3rd Marine Air Wing of Mattis's overall command, the 1st Marine Division. The division is geared up to invade Iraq, just 35 miles north, launching Operation Iraqi Freedom. Mattis, a gentlemanly ladies' man but a lifelong bachelor, has dedicated his life completely to the success and safety of the warriors he commands. In return, he is deeply beloved by them. His constant study of history and philosophy has earned him the affectionate nickname the Warrior Monk and made being smart and well-read cool, elevating the sometimes anti-intellectual tribal Marine culture. He ordered every Marine in the 1st Division to read Russell Bratton's The Siege, which follows the ill-fated British Expeditionary Force during World War I in what was then called Mesopotamia. Mattis wants every Marine to understand the inhospitable Iraqi terrain and the mistakes that cost the British 25,000 men. His voice is calm and loud, with a slight sibilance that softens some of his S's. He speaks without notes, hands on hips or in knife-hand gestures, fixing his attention on individual Marines as he scans the rows of officers from the front to the back of the room. Marine commanders sit in rows before him now, 3rd Air Wing pilots up front in tan flight suits, pistols strapped across their chests, ground commanders behind them in desert camouflage. They are silent, intent on every word. Among the commanders is Lieutenant Colonel Stanton Coair, who later reports on this meeting. "Gentlemen, this is going to be the most air-centric division in the history of warfare," Mattis says. "Don't you worry about the lack of shaping. If we need to kill something, it is going to get killed. I would storm the gates of hell if 3rd Marine Air Wing was overhead." By shaping, he means shaping of the battlefield by air power and artillery. This is usually the preparation for battle meant to find and exploit the enemy's weakest spot. But instead of shaping, Mattis's new maneuver warfare relies on speed and mobility, as he then makes clear with typical good humor. "There is one way to have a short but exciting conversation with me," he continues, "and that is to move too slow. Gentlemen, this is not a marathon, this is a sprint. In about a month, I am going to go forward of our Marines up to the border between Iraq and Kuwait. And when I get there, one of two things is going to happen. Either the commander of the 51st Mechanized Iraqi Division is going to surrender his army in the field to me, or he and all his guys are going to die." Maps are flashed up, showing the initial battle space coordination line, and the Marines are given their rules of engagement. They are permitted to kill anything beyond that line that appears to be a threat. But in the summer of 2002, when Mattis assumed command of the 1st Marine Division, he warned the division staff of several realities. According to one of his public affairs officers, Captain Joe Plensler, he said, "Iraq has a population of 33 million people, and we sure as hell don't want to fight all of them. We only want to fight the ones that are working to keep Saddam Hussein in power." He goes on to insist that if the Iraqis they encountered wanted to help, or just to stand aside, they should find no better friend than a U.S. Marine. This phrase, "no better friend than a U.S. Marine," came from Mattis's reading of Roman General Lucius Cornelius Sulla, who once remarked, "No friend ever served me, and no enemy ever wronged me, whom I have not repaid in full." When he took command of the 1st Division in 2000, Mattis fashioned Sulla's quote into the division's now famous motto, "No better friend, no worse enemy."